Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're trying something a bit different. We're looking into the bilingual brain.
Right. Specifically, how heritage Spanish speakers handle grammar, you know, in both Spanish and English.
It's like getting a peek behind the curtain, isn't it? Seeing how that mental juggling act works.
Exactly. And we want to give you a feel for how this kind of research gets shared. So imagine you're at, say, a conference.
Okay.
And we're walking up to a poster presentation. Our researchers there, maybe explaining their results to a professor. That's a vibe. Focused, kind of nerdy, but fascinating.
Gotcha. So our poster today is based on a study, and they use something called event-related potentials, ERPs.
Yeah, ERPs. Mm. Basically, tiny measurements of brain electricity. It lets you see the brain reacting like millisecond by millisecond as someone reads or hears a sentence. Pretty cool stuff.
So the goal here, our mission for this deep dive.
It's really about understanding those subtle ways our first language shapes how we use a second one, even when someone's really fluent.
You might have those aha moments, right, about your own language learning, maybe.
Hopefully. Seeing how our language history kind of echoes in how we speak and understand now.
Okay, so let's dive into the poster. What was the main question this research was trying to answer?
Fundamentally, it was. How good are these heritage Spanish bilinguals at catching grammar mistakes in English and in Spanish?
And what was the headline finding?
Well, the big thing was this imbalance. There was like way more interference from English into their Spanish grammar than the other way around.
Interesting. Interference. Can you give an example? Like what kind of mistake are we talking about?
Sure. So take adjective placement. In Spanish, you usually say el pollo frito, noun, then adjective.
Right. The chicken fried.
But English does it the other way, the fried chicken. So the study used Spanish sentences that broke the Spanish rule using the English pattern, like the frito pollo.
Ah, okay. So putting the adjective first, English style, but in a Spanish sentence.
Exactly. And what they found was pretty striking. About half the participants, they actually thought the frito pollo sounded okay. They didn't flag it as wrong.
Wow, half of them. So their English grammar instinct was that strong.
It seems so. But now flip it. What about English sentences with a Spanish-style error, like the chicken fried?
Did they accept those too?
No, much less often. They were way better at spotting that as wrong in English.
So the interference really flowed more one way, from English, their dominant language, messing with their Spanish, their heritage language.
Precisely. That asymmetry is key. It really shows how the language you use most, or maybe learned more formally, can kind of impose its rules.
That really makes you think, doesn't it, about those little mistakes you might make in another language and not even know why. Your first language is just there, lurking.
It is. It suggests this deep cognitive structure from your native language is always kind of active, influencing things, even when you're really proficient.
Okay, but they didn't just look at whether people got it right or wrong. They used those ERPs, the brain measurements.
Right. That's where we get beyond just accuracy and see how the brain is dealing with it.
So what did the brain signals show when people were processing these sentences?
This was super interesting. When someone correctly identified that wrong Spanish sentence, the frito pollo one,
yeah,
their brain showed a specific response, a positive ERP component.
Okay, a positive component. What does that usually mean in ERP research? Is that like more effort?
Often, yeah. Think of it maybe like a cognitive, wait a second, signal. It suggests the brain had to work a bit harder, allocate more resources to override the expected English pattern and recognize the Spanish error.
So because the English pattern is so strong, catching the Spanish violation takes more deliberate processing.
That's a good way to put it. Now compare that to when they correctly identify the English sentences with the Spanish style error, like the chicken fried.
What happened then? Was it the same positive thing?
Nope. It was linked to a negative ERP component.
Negative. So the opposite.
In a way. A negative component like this is often associated with a more automatic process, like the brain quickly detecting a mismatch against a very strong, very expected pattern.
Ah, so spotting the error in their dominant language, English, was kind of easier for their brains, less demanding.
It seems that way. For these English-dominant bilinguals, the English grammar rules are just more deeply ingrained, more automatic. Spotting a deviation is less effortful.
So the brain data really backs up the accuracy findings, doesn't it? Shows that interference isn't equal.
Exactly. It's not a symmetrical street. The dominant language has a stronger gravitational pull, you could say, even at the neural level.
Okay, fascinating stuff on grammar. But the poster didn't stop there, right? You mentioned pronunciation too.
That's right. We also looked at the phonetic level. how they actually pronounced Spanish sounds.
What specifically?
We focus on something called voice onset time, VOT. It's a subtle timing difference in how you produce stop consonants, like PTT, K, or in this case, D.
VOT, like the little puff of air.
Yeah.
Or the timing of your vocal cords.
Pretty much the timing between releasing the consonant closure, like your tongue for a D, and when your vocal cords start vibrating. It differs between languages.
Okay. So how did their Spanish VOT look? Did English influence that too?
It looked like it, yeah. Similar pattern to the grammar, actually. The English way of producing sounds seemed to show up more in their Spanish than the other way around.
Another asymmetry. Can you give an example with the D sound?
Well, Spanish D often has something called pre-voicing. Your vocal cords start vibrating before you fully release the D sound. English D doesn't typically do that as much or in the same way.
So you measured how much pre-voicing they used in Spanish.
Exactly. We looked at the proportion of their Spanish D sounds that had this pre-voicing feature, which is considered more, you know, authentically Spanish in many contexts.
Okay. So some might sound a bit more English-like in their Spanish D, others more Spanish-like. Makes sense. But then you connected this back to the grammar processing.
Yes. And this was probably one of the most intriguing findings on the poster. We found a link.
Between pronunciation and grammar, how?
It turned out that the bilinguals who used more of that Spanish style, pre-voicing the ones whose D sounded more distinctly Spanish.
Yeah.
They actually showed more of that positive ERP brain activity when they correctly judged the Spanish grammar sentences.
Wait, hang on. So the ones who sounded more Spanish needed more brain effort to get the Spanish grammar right. That sounds backwards.
It does seem counterintuitive at first glance. But think about it this way.
Okay.
Someone is English dominant, but they still maintain very distinct Spanish phonetic features. Maybe that indicates they use Spanish a bit less frequently overall, or perhaps in more limited contexts.
Okay. So the pronunciation is strong, but maybe the grammatical system isn't accessed as often.
Potentially. So when they do encounter and need to process Spanish grammar correctly, their brain has to engage more actively, more deliberately. That distinct Spanish sound might act like a stronger cue. Okay, switch fully into Spanish mode now. Engage those less practiced grammar rules.
Ah, I see. So it's not that the pronunciation causes the effort, but maybe both reflect a certain pattern of language use where the Spanish grammar system requires more conscious activation for them.
That's one plausible interpretation, yeah. It suggests this really neat interplay between different language levels, sound and structure, and how they relate to cognitive effort in the less dominant language.
And we should remind ourselves, these aren't beginners. What was their proficiency level again?
Good point. These were heritage speakers. Spanish was their first language technically, but they were English dominant. Crucially, their average tested Spanish proficiency was advanced superior.
So really quite skilled in Spanish, yet these subtle effects are still measurable.
Exactly. We had 20 participants who fit this profile.
And the study itself, how did they collect all this data? It sounds complex.
It's pretty thorough. Participants listened to hundreds of sentences, 300 in Spanish, 300 in English. Some correct, some with those cross-language errors we talked about.
Well, hooked up to the ERP machine.
Yep, recording brainwaves the whole time. Then, afterward, they did a speech production task so we could analyze their VOT for the Spanish D.
Wow. So you get behavior right or wrong. You get brain activity. How hard was it? And you get speech analysis. How did they sound?
Precisely. A multi-layered approach.
Okay. Thinking back to our imaginary poster session, if you had to point out the key visuals, what would they be? What graphs would really tell the story?
Well, first up, definitely bar graphs showing the accuracy. You'd have one bar for correctly spotting errors, like Brito Polo in Spanish, maybe around 50% correct.
Yeah.
And right next to it, a much taller bar for correctly spotting chicken fried in English, maybe like 80 or 90% correct.
Yeah.
That difference immediately shows the interference asymmetry, English influencing Spanish more.
Clear visual gap. Got it. What else?
Then you'd need scatter plots for the ERPs, one showing maybe how that positive brainwave component when processing Polo related to getting the answer right.
And another for the English fried.
Exactly. Showing how the negative component related to correct answers there. The different patterns on the plots would visually represent the different brain processes for each language's errors.
So you could literally see the brain responding differently.
You could see the correlation, yeah. And the final key visual would be that link between sound and grammar.
The pre-voicing and the ERPs.
Right. Another scatter plot, probably.
Mm.
Showing that as the amount of Spanish-like pre-voicing on the D sound went up, so did that positive ERP activity when judging Spanish grammar correctly.
And you'd have the stats there too, like the p-values.
Oh yeah, you'd definitely include the p.05 and the r-squared values to show the correlation was statistically meaningful. It really drives home that connection between pronunciation patterns and the cognitive effort for grammar.
Okay, so let's try and sum up our poster. Basically, English being dominant really shapes how these heritage speakers handle their Spanish grammar.
Yeah, it takes more brain power, more conscious effort to get the Spanish grammar right, especially when it bumps up against an English pattern.
And we see that in both their accuracy, making more errors in Spanish, and in their brain activity, that positive ERP component.
Exactly. And then there's that fascinating twist. People who hold on to a more distinct Spanish pronunciation might actually need to recruit more of that cognitive effort when they process Spanish grammar correctly.
Suggesting a complex relationship between how often or how automatically different parts of the language system are used.
Precisely. It paints a really nuanced picture of bilingualism, much more complex than just being good or bad at a language.
Well, hopefully walking through this poster has given you, our listener, a real sense of the intricate workings of the bilingual brain. It's pretty amazing stuff.
It really is. And maybe it makes you think a bit differently about your own language experiences.
How so?
Well, just consider your own journey with languages. Where do you notice interference happening? Maybe from your first language into your second, or even the other way around. And what parts feel easy, automatic, versus what parts require real conscious effort? Could it be that your native language is playing a role there, even in ways you haven't considered? Something to chew on?